Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you are the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Are you really doing fantastic or just...
I think so.
Okay.
I'm glad to be alive.
I was going
to
say, you live to see another day, so there you go.
I did. Yesterday, I was on my way to a bridal shower with my daughters, and I had a tire explode.
That's dangeroso, really.
Very. Something was feeling kind of weird on the car, and I pulled off on an exit ramp, and all of a sudden, I heard a pop, and there you go. My tire exploded. It was pretty much off the wheel.
That's it's pretty scary. That's never happened to me, knock on wood.
First time it's ever happened to me. And of course, it was 20 degrees outside.
Of course.
And oh, you don't need a coat, sweetheart. We're just going to be in the car and in and out. Yeah, you need a coat. Yeah. You should always bring a coat. I should know better.
Yeah, or at least throw blankets in the back in case.
Being 25 years old, I should know better than to never leave the house without a coat.
Maybe you need to be 26.
When it's 20 degrees. 26, maybe. So. Maybe in my 26th year, I'll learn.
I doubt it, but whatever.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Anyway, yeah, so that's fun. What's up with you?
Lots and nothing all at the same time. You know.
I do.
You
do
know.
Do you have a little episode for us?
I do. And this
enjoy,
one,
partake?
You know, sometimes, okay, and we just have to say it right now, murder is never funny, people. It's never funny. However, and we've said this how many times, especially me, sometimes the people that commit the crime, it's kind of like... really makes you take a step back and say, what? Like that. So
like that's, Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah, kind of. Very, yeah. You'll see. This is one of those stories. And it's a little bit older. So I always feel like I can take a little bit more freedom with the older cases because the people really, you know, distant relatives might be around, but they're not anymore. So it's kind of, yeah.
Yes.
You know. So you ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here we go. Now, Jen, you and I both know love makes you do crazy things, right?
Yeah, no.
You stumble your words, you daydream nonstop about what could be, you have permigran, and you even shave your legs. Well, up until like month 4, and then who cares? Everything goes out the window.
Exactly.
Because it's all there. So there's been millions of songs written about love.
There has been.
Oh, see, I thought for sure you would sing a song there, so I paused.
What is love?
There you go. Thank you. Men have won and lost wars all because of the love of a good woman. Edward VIII, who would be king of England, gave up his throne for Wallace Simpson, who was divorced. And if that's not bad enough, Jen, she was American. Oh, my.
No way.
Now, that was shocking. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that this was shocking. Then, today, you see Meghan Markle and Prince Harry Henry, and sort of the same thing, but, you know.
I know. It's still shocking.
It is, kind
that
of.
That happens.
It is. So there have been great couples in history that have been romanticized over the years, such as Cleopatra and Mark Antony, Napoleon and Josephine, Johnny and June Cash, and Walburga and Otto.
Oh, yeah. Those are my favorite ones.
Now, their love story, you might not be very well informed about, but I promise it's not something you're going to forget anytime soon. You ready?
Are you going to inform us?
I'm going to inform
you. Boom, boom, now. Informer?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry. I never quite knew what they were saying.
Here we go. Los Angeles, 1922. Police report to a residence after neighbors reported hearing gunfire. Authorities enter the house and are shocked to see a man bleeding on the ground from gunshot wounds. As they're taking it all in, they're kind of looking around to see if they can see anything out of place, if it was maybe a robbery gone bad, or they didn't know at this point. However, All of a sudden, they hear something very faint. They become quiet and they listen, and they can hear a woman's voice coming from the closet.
It's coming from inside the house.
The closet, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah.
An officer slowly approaches the door and opens it. Sitting on the floor is a woman who is locked in the closet with an incredible tale to tell. And it's a tale. Let's say that, okay?
Oh, so it may not be true.
You'll see. The woman, who is speaking through her tears, tells police that she had just arrived home from a party about 2 hours ago. Her name is Walburga Ostrich. Walburga Ostrich. She's German
like
heritage.
Donnie Wahlberg, but it's Walburga?
Without the R. Yes, correct. So Walburga goes by the name Dolly. So this is going to be a lot easier for me. Dolly says that the dead man on the floor was her beloved husband, 35-year-old Fred. 33-year-old Dolly says that the couple had arrived home. She was putting away her stole in the closet.
Which is like a mink cover
shoulder
thing.
I guess those were more for like decoration, right? Like they didn't really keep you warm, right?
It's maybe more like a fancy scarf.
Yeah. So as she's putting her stole away in the closet, all of a sudden she felt a shove. She was pulled into the closet and the door slammed behind her. She wiggled the doorknob, but it was locked from the outside. She immediately started yelling for Fred, assuming it was him, you know, playing a joke on her. Mm-hmm. But this was no funny prank.
No. Could you imagine how pissed you would be?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. All of a sudden, gunshots rang out. On the lower level, the officers were going over the living room and trying to figure out just what happened. Furniture had been flipped over and the place was ransacked. On the floor was Fred, who had been shot twice in the chest and once in the head. There was also a hole in the ceiling where a bullet had hit. There were two 25 caliber handgun casings, but no gun to be found. They also noticed that his pocket watch was missing from the chain. The watch, which had diamonds on it, was a gift from his wife, Dolly. Police wonder now if someone had wanted this watch so much so badly, that they would kill him for it.
Wow.
And lock Dolly in the closet. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Murder would be kind of a, no pun intended, but it would be overkill for a diamond-encrusted watch,
I would think most people would just give it to you, but whatever. So Dolly was born in Germany around 1880, and she had moved...
would never have known that with that name.
Well, and she had moved to Wisconsin in her teen years. Her life had been pretty rough up until this point, but that was all about to change. Fred Osterich was born on December 8th, 1877, and he was the wealthy owner of an apron factory in Milwaukee.
Hmm.
Now take that in. The wealthy owner of an apron factory. Is there a such thing? I guess so.
An apron factory?
Yeah.
It would be some kind of textile factory, but...
Yeah.
Aprons were much... They were used a lot until, I guess, the 60s.
Probably the 60s and 70s, too. I'd almost say until the 80s, but neither here nor there. Fred was a very serious man who worked hard, and he drank even harder. He spent more time at the bar with his friends than he did at home with Dolly. The couple had moved to Los Angeles from Milwaukee about 4 years prior to this happening. Fred had decided he was going to expand the family business and was coming there to open an apron factory right there in Los Angeles. At this time, the couple had been together 20 years. Fred had been scrimping and saving, and he had built his fortune to $500,000, which equals about $7 million by today's standards. All off aprons, might I add. I just found that funny. I don't know why. I don't think we could find an apron heiress today. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't. I kind of agree with you.
Okay. Different time, Jen. Police continue the questioning of Dolly. Dolly tells them that her husband had heard what he thought may have been people or strange noises in the house. He gets up to investigate and finds no one there, but often Fred would find missing money or some missing food. As police continued to collect evidence from the scene, they noticed nothing else had been taken, not even Fred's wallet, which was right by his body when he collapsed on the floor.
Hmm.
Police at this time are thinking that Fred and Dolly interrupted a robbery. Dolly went to put her stole away upstairs as Fred stayed downstairs. Then Fred was left to deal with the burglars, who ultimately took his life. That's what they're thinking so far.
Right. Wait, they think that it was actually happened upstairs and not downstairs?
No, no, no. She went upstairs to put her stole away. Okay? Okay. He's downstairs in the living room. Okay? So it's a two-story house, I guess.
Got you.
And
okay.
The burglars, you know, they came home when the burglars were there to get Fred or get Fred's watch, or maybe it was just a robbery gone bad at this point. That's what the police are thinking at this point.
Okay. Because I just assumed, like, when you come in the house, that's you usually keep your
put your closet
coats.
Right there. Yeah. Not when you have a fine mink stole. Maybe that has to go in your bedroom closet, Jen. I don't know.
That's true. Because it probably has to go into your cedar lined closet. That was a very popular.
Or your safe. You don't know. It could be a safe.
Maybe.
Why did they have cedar lined closet? Because it made your fit, kept away moths and made your clothes smell? Is that why?
It keeps moth away. Yeah. It keeps moth away.
Investigators begin to canvass the area and interview neighbors. Police ask them if there had been any issue with robberies in the neighborhood. And one of the neighbors says, well, yeah, there had been. A neighbor lady had said she had heard gunshots and a woman scream. She went to the window to see if she could see anything outside. She reported seeing a dark, shadowy figure move across the back of the house, but was unable to determine if it was male or female. She then added shortly after that all the lights in the Osterick home went out.
Ooh, dun, dun, dun. Very ominous.
Now, if you go rob a house and shoot the owner, knowing the wife of the owner is still alive and, well, in the closet, why would a burglar stick around, right? Don't you think they'd hightail it out of there?
I would. You'd That's pretty damn sure.
Police start to wonder who would do this and how in the world Dolly was locked in the closet from the outside. And that's the point, right? Why, if you killed the man, aren't you going to hightail it out of there? Or are you going to start upstairs and shove the woman in the closet and then go downstairs and, you know, because if you got shoved in the closet, you're going to be screaming, right? You see where I'm going with this. So police officers, highly perplexed at this point, and the only thing that they could think now was that there had to be a third person. A third person was there. But who? Dolly decides to hire an attorney, Mr. Shapiro, and not the Mr. Shapiro we know from the OJ case, by the way.
I was going to say, a distant relative.
There you go. She just wanted to be safe and, you know, wanted to help the authorities in trying to find the murderer of her husband. And I think just make sure she was doing all the right things, right? Because we know that sometimes that can go south, right? Better to be safe than sorry.
Exactly.
Officers go to the garment factory and start inquiring about the couple with the employees who work there. The employees tell officers that they've actually never seen either of them with another person, only each other, right? So they never were hanging out with somebody in the factory with other people. They did say that Fred could have quite the temper, but he was a self-made businessman, and that was to be expected. You know, he was had a lot on his plate becoming quite wealthy, and then employing all those people, making sure everything runs smoothly, and all that good stuff, right?
Doesn't mean you have to be crabby.
Well, just firm. Let's go with firm. Police decide to question someone who knew them well. Police fly the old plant manager from Milwaukee, because remember they started there, to Los Angeles, and they wanted to have a little sit-down and get kind of the overall picture of the house, the factory, everything that surrounds them. Now, this manager's name was Perry Vose, and he paints a picture of Fred that's not exactly a very pretty one. He tells them that Fred drank, and he drank a lot. Fred was a screamer, and not in the good way. He was angry all the time and would walk around the plant shouting and screaming at anyone who was in the line of fire. Perry would tell them that he was not well-liked at all at the factory. And Perry goes on to say that while Fred was not a pleasant man, it became worse after the death of Raymond, the couple's only son, 10 years earlier.
I can see that happening.
Oh, totally. Give up on life, man. While Fred was dealing with the death of his child through drinking and long hours of work, Dolly was very sweet to the employees. All of them said she was very kind and gentle. She was motherly, really.
And when she walked in, they would say, "Hello, Dolly."
That's what I named the script. You're so cute.
Oh, really? See how psychic.
Well, hello, Dolly. Yes, for a couple of reasons, but you'll see why. All of them said Dolly was very sweet and gentle. She was actually motherly to them. And in an effort to make everything go smoothly with Fred's recent death, the murder of Fred, and all that he was holding, Dolly hires a lawyer to help handle all the paperwork. The lawyer's name is Mr. Herman Shapiro, which we talked about earlier. During the interview, Perry Voss does bring up one name, Edward Flood. What a name, right? Flood used to work. Flood, F-L-U-D-E. Let's go with Edward. Edward used to work in the Milwaukee plant, and he even stayed with the Asterix for a little bit. Now, they had a falling out, and a short time later, Edward found himself in trouble, and, you know, just a little bit of trouble, and he just went to prison for a little bit. Now, after he was released, the police could not locate him. They weren't able to find Fred. They wanted to talk to him, obviously, since they had the falling out. As police are looking for Edward, an interesting find takes center stage, Jen. Police ask the lawyer, Mr. Shapiro, to come on down and answer a few questions. Now, as Mr. Shapiro is being talked to by authorities, he reaches in his pocket to check the time. Oh. Well, I'll be golly gosh darn, police cannot believe their eyes. His pocket watch is the exact same kind as the one Fred was wearing when he died and had went missing, leading
you
authorities.
Don't say.
It's true. It is true.
Wow.
I mean, that's a humdinger, right? Calmly, officers ask Mr. Shapiro, hey, where'd you get such a nice watch? Mr. Shapiro tells them it was a birthday gift from Dolly. Now, this watch was an extremely nice gift for anyone, but a bit over the top for your attorney that you hired to help with paperwork, right?
Well, maybe she got it at a bulk discount.
Unless, of course, Jen, your attorney is practicing more than law on you.
Look at you go.
Yeah, I know. It's the first of many bad jokes. Dun-dun-bum. Herman Shapiro admits, yes, he and Dolly have been spending some time together, but he knew nothing about the watch once belonging to the now deceased man. And he maintains that the watch was just a gift, only a gift. Nothing, you know, nothing illegal about it, right?
Sure. All right, Mr. Attorney.
Mm-hmm. Police now pull in Dolly to the station. They have a few questions from her that they need some answering to. First, why in the world does your attorney have the watch that your dead husband is missing? Seems like a legit question, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Now, Dolly states, you know, this is a really funny misunderstanding, really. Now, while Dolly thought it was stolen the night he died, she was wrong. It just, voila,
found in up in Fred's pocket?
Close. Couch cushions. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
That found it there. You know, she never thought to look there. You know, wow. And, you know, instead of mentioning it to police, hey, I found this, she just died. I'll just give it to my lawyer because I like him and he's doing me favors. I just won't mention it to the police. That's what she tells them.
I'm sure he's doing her some real favors.
So police, of course, have to look into Dolly and see if Dolly and Mr. Shapiro had any contact prior to her hiring him to look out for the warehouse's best interest, I guess, and also for her. You know what I'm saying?
It seems they had a lot of contact.
So, you know, they're thinking maybe Mr. Shapiro's innocent. And maybe, you know, he is just a pawn in something Dolly's doing. So they decide to bounce back over to Dolly, okay? They're going to take a look at little Dolly. Authorities dig in on Dolly, and they find out that Dolly was seeing a man, a film producer whose name is Ray Klum. Now, Ray Klum was... Klum. Like Plum with the K.
Wow, Klum, that's a name.
Yeah. Klum was a good friend of both Fred and Dolly and had known them from their Wisconsin days, back in the olden days. In fact, the couple had loaned Ray Klum some money. Okay? So and remember, you never loan money. You give money away. And if it's paid back, it's a bonus. It's a life lesson, people. Police wanted to know if Ray Klum had ever paid the couple back and how he paid it back. So Ray Klum,
in love.
Ray Klum sheepishly tells them that he did something for her and now he regrets it. Ray Klum states that he had met Dolly in a park. She'd asked him to meet him in a park. And in fact, if you're from LA or the greater LA region, you're going to know where this is because I lived right across the street from here. They had met at the La Brea Tar Pits. That's right on Wilshire, right in, I think you came to visit me there. I mean, I think we went there. Yep.
And you know why I know the La Brea Tar Pits?
Fred Flintstone.
Laverne and Shirley did an episode at the La Brea Tar Pits.
Oh, they did?
Okay.
When Ray Klum and Dolly met at the La Brea Tar Pits, Dolly handed him a package and asked him to get rid of it for her by tossing it into the La Brea tar pits, into the tar pit, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this was just a few days after the murder. Now, as all, we know, the tar pits is, if you've never been to Los Angeles, they have like fake dinosaur giant statues that come in there because the idea was is that there's all kinds of bones that have been trapped in the tar pits and they've stayed there forever and people can't get them because it's tar, right? So you can't
get
anything.
And they're real, honest to God, they're filled with actual natural tar.
Yes.
That's made from the earth, yes.
Correct. So Mr. Ray Klum went ahead and he tossed that bag into the tar pits, right? And again, ideally, you would never catch that back. You would never be able to get it back out. No. And find out what's in it. Now, police go and they look around the tar pit area. They're pretty sure they're not going to find anything. And they're walking the grounds around it. And like a bright, shiny star in the night gin, they see a brown bag. Could it be? Why, yes, it could be. And it is. Apparently, Ding Dong Ray Klum needs to get his money back from that pitching lesson. Because even though he threw that bag, he missed the pits. The bag was sitting just right outside the actual tar part. So he threw it, but nobody checked to make sure it went in. These people aren't real smart. So police get the bag. They open it and golly gee beef. I guess you have no idea what's going to be in there, do you, Jen?
Uh-uh. Not at all. I'm dying. I'm at the edge of my seat.
It's a gun, Jen. It's a
gun.
No
way.
It is. And it's the same caliber gun that was used to kill Fred.
Wow. What a coincidence. That's almost like the identical watch, too.
It is, right?
Was that found in the couch cushion?
Yes. No. Awesome. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, it's been 11 months since Fred's murder, and Dolly is arrested. Police want to know about the gun. Dolly tells them that she simply found it around the house and wanted to get rid of it because she believed that the police would think she was a suspect.
No way.
Huh? Police test the gun, and there's obviously no forensic evidence on the gun. No fingerprints, no blood, no nothing. And with no witness coming forward, they're in a holding pattern. Police have no evidence, but they're beginning to become convinced she was somehow involved in Fred's murder.
Wow, you think?
What they can't quite put together is how did she lock herself in that closet from the outside? Now, this would be back in the olden days where, you know how we have the push-button locks and all that stuff. These were the old-fashioned ones. So they know
with the skeleton key. You have to have a key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they know that there had to be a third person in there somehow. With nothing to hold her on, the district attorney has no choice but to release Dolly from custody.
There are people on death row nowadays that have more circumstantial evidence, that have been convicted on circumstantial evidence than...
Jennifer, we've already talked about this. It was an accident that it fell in the couch. It was an accident that gun, she just didn't want to get in trouble.
I know. I'm just saying there's people on death row that are convicted with less evidence than this, but I digress. Go ahead.
So you think it can't get much weirder? It's about to. 5 years pass, and good old Mr. Shapiro pays a visit to the district attorney, and he shares a little bit of a shocking story. Mr. Shapiro and Dolly were no longer an item. So Shapiro was in the clear to tell the truth, right?
Yeah.
Shapiro tells them that while Dolly was in jail oh so long ago, he would visit her regularly when she was being held in jail. During one of those visits, Dolly asked Shapiro to go purchase some items from the store and take them to her house. Now, this is the same house that had been sitting empty during her jail stay. Shapiro's puzzled and he asks, why? Why would I go buy you food?
And how long ago was...
This is 5 years since they were no longer seeing each other.
Right, but right? How
5 years since the crime.
How long was she being held in prison?
I don't know. A couple days. I don't know. Long enough that you don't need food at your house if you're not going to be there.
Gotcha.
The whole point to this. So Dolly informed him that her half-brother was staying there.
Oh. Hmm.
Shapiro complied, and he dropped off the groceries at the house, and he... made note that it was kind of weird that no one was there. It didn't look like anybody had been there since she was, you know, taken into custody. But okay. Police were like, okay, so what? You know, that's not a problem. Well, then Shapiro then said, well, there is more and it's a bit strange, right?
Okay.
It seems like her brother, the one that was visiting, was living in the attic.
Oh.
And yeah. Shapiro was instructed to knock on the ceiling of the bedroom closet to alert the brother. It was their code. He had to knock in a certain pattern to let him know that somebody was there to see him. Now, the man that answered the closet door looked to be about in his 30s, and he was told Mr. Shapiro that his name was Otto Sanhuber.
Oh, another Irish name. Okay.
Mick Otto, Mick Sanhuber. Otto states that he was born into poverty and that had continued on throughout his life. Trying to get by, he said that he was only a teen when he began working as a sewing machine repairman at where?
The Apron Factory.
The Apron Factory, that's
but
right.
But wait, didn't Dolly say that this was her brother?
Uh-huh, yep.
Oh, yeah. So they
their last names don't
stories.
Match. Mm-hmm. It's true. Now, Dolly, who is always welcoming to all her new employees, held a special place in her apron pocket for Otto.
Wink, I'm sure it was her wink. Apron pocket.
Mm-hmm. One day, Dolly was sewing some curtains when her machine quit. An idea occurred to her. She called Fred to tell him to send someone over to fix her machine. Now, luckily, she got her wish, and Otto was sent over to work on her machine. Mm. Dolly opened the door and was wearing black silk stockings and a robe. Oh, and a little bit of perfume dotted behind each ear. That's it. That's all
wow.
she was wearing. At this time, Dolly was 33 years old, and Otto was only 17 years old.
Gross.
This was actually at her home, right? So she's at the house.
And this was like in the 20s, too.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Dolly, you've got some splaining to do.
17-year-old Otto looked at the machine, and he informed Dolly that the problem was that the needle wasn't hitting her machine right. What she needed was a good bobbin. He'd fix it and would be able to give her the back stitch she's always wanted.
The old bobbin weave is what he's wanting.
Okay, I just made all that up, but because it's funny, because sewing terms are funny, but whatever. He really did come over to fix it. So while Fred was busy drinking and working, he wasn't really tending to his husbandly duties, if you know what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
He left Dolly at home, and she was getting a little lonely. But Dolly, she thinks she found the way to fix that. So it was only moments after Otto arrived at the house, the two found themselves in bed.
Hmm.
What? He's 17.
Well, I mean, that's how you do fix a sewing machine, or so I'm told.
I guess.
Some machine, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, Otto would start making more and more repair visits to Dolly's house, and Otto would later state that Dolly could not get enough, sometimes fixing her machine as much as 10 times in one visit. As the visits grew more frequent, Dolly started...
17. That's
yeah, thank you. As the visits grew more frequent, Dolly started to worry about the neighbors noticing. Gee, you think? He's only there every other day for hours. I mean, how many machines do you have and how many times can they break, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Fear not, Jen. Dolly came up with a plan. She suggested that Otto, hey buddy, 17-year-old sex stud, why don't you quit your job and you can move into our house. I mean, attic. What a great idea. You can
That's
live
perfect.
Here rent-free, and Dolly can get her live-in repairman who mm-hmm. would be available to fix her machine at any time.
Anytime she needed.
Anytime.
So
day
basically,
or night.
He was her sex slave.
He was her sewing sex slave.
Yeah.
Otto agreed, and he soon moved in. Now, this is all so strange and so weird, but...
But you know what? That's a 17-year-old's dream job, I guess. Man, 17-year-old boy.
To live in
know.
An attic? What do you do?
I mean, nothing. To live in an attic,
and
have
sex
with a woman anytime she wants and not have to work.
I don't know. I think I'd be boring. Maybe a week, but that'd be about
You're
it.
You're not a 17-year-old boy either.
It's true. You don't know that for sure. You've never seen me. Now... This story gets weirder and weirder. It's a WTF. Okay, here we go. So when Fred would leave for work, Otto would come out of the attic, and he would be her boy toy all day long. Plus, Jen, this is a pretty good setup, really. He'd do all her housework.
Oh, God.
So Dolly, I mean, honestly, she's kind of got a good thing here. Dolly would sneak food up to him in the living space of the attic where he stayed. She had put a bed up there and a desk. Otto, you know, he's biding his time in the attic doing whatever, I don't know, what we just talked about, read, I guess. And You know, he'd always wanted to be a fiction writer. He wanted to write pulp fiction, which was so popular back then, right? Dolly would even take some of his stories and actually got them published under a pen name, Walter Klein. Like, we don't have enough names going on here, okay?
Klum?
So, Walter Klein.
Oh, Klein.
Walter Klein.
Like Kevin Klein.
Yes, exactly. So, Jen, there's just one little thing I didn't mention about this, which is makes it all that much weirder. All of this started, not in Los Angeles, you know, where they are now. This started back in Wisconsin.
She packed him up and moved him?
So when the family decided to move to L.A., you know, you'd think, this is all going to come out. We got to figure some stuff out. But nope.
Or it'd just be over with.
The lovebirds had now been loving it up. You ready? I about fell over. 7 years. 7 years he had been living in their attic. Okay?
No
Seven
way.
Years. 7 years in Wisconsin. So she was like, this is, no.
This is worse than R. Kelly's in the closet thing.
Thank you. Dolly was like, heck no, this isn't any. I got a pretty good thing here. I mean, he takes care of my machine and he cleans my house and does sheets. I mean, and windows. He does it all,
secret
right?
Secret lovers.
Really secret. So Dolly, adamant this was not going to end. The only thing she needed to do was find a house in LA that had what?
An attic
in it. That's right. That's probably
easier to find than one with a basement, right?
That's right. So the family, the loving family of two and a half, three, moved to Los Angeles. And guess what? They kept this arrangement going for another 4 years.
Are you kidding me?
No. Talk about being trapped in a relationship. Like, this boy's literally trapped. And now he's in Los Angeles. And he's had all those years with no education, no job skills. Except for the fine lovemaking, right?
You got to wonder what kept him there. Seriously.
Stockholm Syndrome? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. That's kind of creepy. All right.
Okay, back to, that was a little backstory for that. Yeah. So, Otto and Mr. Shapiro, you know, Mr. Shapiro is talking to Otto still. And as they kind of become friends, as he's dropping off the groceries and doing these little things that Dolly wanted Mr. Shapiro to do. Now, Mr. Shapiro doesn't realize that Otto and Dolly have a little thing, right? Just as Otto doesn't realize that Mr. Shapiro and Dolly have a little thing. So Dolly's using all her feminine wiles to get whatever she wants, however it's going to be,
any way
right?
possible.
So the two of them actually kind of become pretty friendly. Otto begins to open up more and more. And he tells Mr. Shapiro that Fred and Dolly went out that evening, the evening in question, to a dinner party. And it was a great big, you know, thing. It was planned. It was fun and all that good stuff. When they came back home, they began fighting. And it was a big fight. Otto stated that he thought Fred was hurting Dolly. So he rushes out of the attic with the gun in his hand, where he found Dolly on the ground and a rather bewildered Fred. I mean, can you imagine going, aren't you the machine repairman from Milwaukee?
Exactly.
What are you doing in my house, right? I'm sure it was kind of like, huh? Otto claimed that Fred came at him, and Otto, thinking Fred was going to kill him, decides to shoot him first. The two, Dolly and Otto, then came up with a plan. They decided what they had to do next. And that plan would set the stage to make it look like a robbery. And Otto would lock Dolly in the closet. He was the third person. And it would make it look like she was just an innocent bystander, robbery, break-in. And then he would return to the attic and he would just sit up there and wait till police came, went through everything, and then disappeared, right?
Right. None the wiser.
None the wiser. And it's true. The police did come. They arrived. They questioned her. They took him away. All that stuff. They never checked the attic. Because
why would you?
Right. When Fred died, Dolly had sold the house she once shared with Fred, as well as his business. Now that's the apron thing. Now she took all the money and she purchased a new home. And then Otto moved downstairs. He's moving on up, literally. He moves downstairs to be with Dolly in the new house. Okay. And the couple would live together as a couple that they had, I guess, always dreamed of being, right?
I would hope so.
But there's only one problem. You see, Dolly never really intended for Otto to step in as the man of the house. She was afraid people would talk because he was so much younger.
Oh, so they're not going to talk that he's living in the attic when everybody finds out, right?
Well, they didn't know that yet, of course. Dolly, you know, this was a different time, Jen. She couldn't have a young man living with her. Like, they're not even married. Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
Otto, as we had said earlier, as we talked about, he had nowhere else to go. This is all he's been doing. He's right. been living in this attic for, you know, 10 plus years. He doesn't have anywhere to go. So guess what? He moves back into the attic of the new house where he would remain until mid-1923.
Jesus.
Right? Okay.
There's so other options.
You'd think, right? Get a good... He needs to get a good education. He needs to go to church and meet a nice girl. That's exactly. what my mom would tell me. Mm-hmm. That's what my mom would say. Now, the person who would end up rescuing Otto was none other than Mr. Herman Shapiro, the once lover of Dolly, but also her attorney. Shapiro, after their long talk, they really kind of became friends, decided to help Otto get out of the house. Get out and get on his feet, I guess. Shapiro, after doing all this, was then free to do what? Move in with Dolly, because that's what he wanted. So he moves in with Dolly, and they continue to live together before eventually they had a falling out. They have a nice little time together for a while. They live together, you know, but guess what? They had a huge falling out.
No.
Now, here's the thing. If you're a murder suspect, which probably you really are the murder perpetrator, mm-hmm. probably you need to keep, you know, they say that you got to keep your friends closer and your enemies closer, and then the people that know your secrets, you need to really, like, stay on top of them. You
or
know
kill
saying?
Them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I meant by that, but I was trying to be nice. So at this time, when they broke up or got in that big fight, Mr. Shapiro was upset. Mm-hmm. He says, yeah, I'm going to show you. So he goes to police and he spills everything.
I'm taking my ball home. Yeah.
That's right. And he tells them everything. And the police are like, obviously, like you and I are like,
shocked.
What? Yeah. Are you kidding me? Obviously, the media goes crazy hearing this incredible account of this guy's story. I would be like, you're crazy. I mean, I would think that he was insane, mentally ill, seriously. The little Otto guy, the love of Walberta's life, of course, mm-hmm. Dolly's life, got a moniker because, you know, the media, and we talk about this all the time in the podcast, they love to give their monikers to people. Mm-hmm. So Otto would become known as, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Batman, because his existence was that of a bat in a cave. And remember, the Batman that we know about today had not existed yet. The comic came later. So this was before the Batman that we know. One word. This was Batman, two words. Otto was convicted of manslaughter due to the murder of Fred. But at the time, the statute of limitations on manslaughter in California was only 3 years. And it had now been 8 years past the murder of Fred. So guess what?
He got away.
Otto got to walk away from the attic. Literally, he got sunlight and he got to walk away.
But did he like that? It seems like he's been living up there for so long.
That's what I said, like a Stockholm syndrome. I'm telling you, I don't know.
Kind of got that agoraphobia or something.
So Dolly now goes on trial, where her attorney would argue that the only thing Dolly was guilty of is loving another.
Others.
Or five, yeah. or whichever the count was. What happened between Otto and Fred had nothing to do with her. The trial ended, and the verdict, Jen?
Guilty.
Hung jury. The district attorney decided that they did not want to try the case again, and so Dolly Walberga Osterich simply walked away a free woman.
Wow.
Now, Dolly went on to marry Ray Burt Hendrick, with whom she would stay married for upwards of 30 years until his death at age 80. Dolly would pass just 2 weeks later.
Now, if you were her second husband, wouldn't you constantly be checking the attic to make sure that there's nobody else up there?
Right.
Wow.
Otto changed his name to, you ready?
Bruce Wayne.
You'd think, right? Walter Klein, and moved to Canada and got married. So I guess he went ahead. Now, Walter Klein, you know that name
was his
from earlier.
Pen name.
Yep.
That he
kind
wrote
of funny,
the book.
Huh? I guess he wanted the profits from all that. He did get married, so I'm guessing that he had somewhat of a
normal life after that, after he was deprogrammed.
Ish. Is that something or what? And I think the biggest shock to me, I think all of it's shocking, really, but actually moving him from Milwaukee to Los Angeles. Like, how did they even do that? I mean, I'm sure she just
put
all
train.
The something, but obviously he doesn't have much to move because it's all hers.
And you would have to wonder, I mean, I'm thinking he's going to have to totally Anne Frank his existence up in the attic because, you know what I'm saying? Like, he couldn't walk around when the husband was home because the husband might have heard. Mm-hmm. We have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in Milwaukee, he could probably, I'm just guessing here, in Milwaukee, he could probably go about town, right? But when you're in Los Angeles, you're walking down the street and Fred says, "Hey, Otto from Milwaukee, is that you?" So he probably really did have to stay pretty hidden in Los Angeles. Now it's a huge town and I get all that, but you know what I'm saying? How many times do you run into people that you never expect you'd run into and you do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess, but still.
And then the attorney, like she just wrapped those boys all, just wrapped them around her little fingers.
I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, the affair, I can understand. She's probably a little rough time with her son passing away, her husband becoming a dick because of the son passing away, which is understandable too. But to move your lover in is just kind of weird.
Well, a couple ironic things about this, and you said it earlier. You said, "Well, hello, Dolly." And I named this, "Well, hello, Dolly." Like I wrote "well" in lowercase and "hello, Dolly" in all capitals. But part of this also reminded me of Otto being like her keepsake, her doll. Like, here's my doll. I want it forever. I'm going to keep it. And I'm going to keep it in my closet. I'm going to keep it in my closet forever and ever and ever. And it's going to love me forever. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sort of Otto was her play toy, her thing.
Or
like a doll.
Like a puppy dog. Like
or a doll.
Yeah.
A dolly. Baby doll. Yeah. Weird. Whole thing's weird.
Insane is what it is.
Right?
Insane in the membrane.
In the membrane. So that's what I have for you this fine Wednesday afternoon, people.
Well, no wonder. Who would have ever expected that, you know, it's coming from inside the house? Unreal.
But, and then you ask your boyfriend, "Hey, hon, hey, I know I'm in jail. I just got caught up in some little, you know, maybe a murder. I don't know. But can you do me a favor? Can you go to the Schnucks, the Dierbergs, the Kroger's? Go to the Kroger's.
Grocery store.
We need some bread, some people, whatever. And then take it to my house. And when you get there, yeah, it's my brother. He's living there. And make sure you knock three times
on the ceiling code if you love me. Yeah.
It's to see, and he'll come. Yeah. He's a little shy. A little shy. Doesn't like sunshine.
I wonder if it was the shave and the head haircut thing. I wonder if that was do you know that one?
What that means.
Shave.
Yeah, I know that knock.
You know.
Oh, shave and a haircut.
Yeah. I wonder
or
if
could
that
be
was the knock.
Match in the gas tank. Boom, boom.
Ah, nice. Never Gilbert heard Grape. That one.
Gilbert Grape. Match in the... That's what Johnny Depp would always say to little Leo. Match in the gas tank. Boom, boom.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I read the book. Okay. Love the book. Yeah, that was good.
That's all I got for you.
Very interesting. I don't want... I don't think that would ever happen today, do you?
I don't think it could.
You do?
No, I don't think it could. Yeah. I mean, I just don't think... People are so self-consumed and self-absorbed that I don't think you would... Who am I to say, though? I mean, I guess it could happen today, but it would be held against your will, because that does happen.
Well, and I kind of think that would be like Otto was. He was poor. He had probably no other where to go.
Well, think about it. 16, you know me in math, so at 17 and 11 years, so he's 28 now. So from 17 to 28, he's been her lover, her secret lover.
Right.
No education, no job, no nothing, like no trade. Woo!
No, but
terrible.
But he was completely poor, right? Pretty sure that he thought that was a pretty good gig.
I mean, honestly, if it kind of is, I guess, you know?
I don't know.
I mean, better than being on the street?
Yeah.
At least he has a roof over his head.
Exactly.
Literally, because he's up at the top.
Exactly.
But bump.
That's all he has. All right, interesting. Ooh, very good.
I got jokes today. Jokes today. Jokes today. All right, Jen. That's all I got for you.
All righty. That's awesome.
Hey, check out our show notes to find out where I got all this humdinger of stuff. And also make sure if you like us, you can go to iTunes and like and subscribe. And leave us a little note. And, you know, if it's nice, that's even better. But if not, hey, okay, whatever. And stay tuned to the end of this episode for the lovely outtakes, as well as where else you can find us in the world.
Or just
I saw that, and I'm smiling from ear to ear right now as if somebody can see me. Whatever. I'm a dork. All right, Jen. That's all I got for you. Ready?
Yep.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes, or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production. Sorry, I smushed that together. See what happens when I don't know what I'm doing.
We got this far not knowing what we're doing.
Thank you. I know. Cut that out, Nico. That's going to be my new favorite shirt. We got to get shirts that say that.
Cut that out, Nico.
Yeah. Okay. One day, Dolly.
Pocket, Paul.
Pocket. What is a pocket? Polly Pocket. It was a Polly Pocket.
Well, there's a sex toy by the name of Pocket Pal.
Oh, I don't know nothing about that, Jen. Hooker. One day, Dolly.
From your mom. I heard about it. He wants it to be a paperback writer. Yeah.
In edit. In edit. I'm moderately pretty. Does that count? Sorry. Go ahead.
Sure. Taking a broad stroke on that moderately definition there, aren't you? All right. Kidding. I'm just kidding. So,
no, you're not. Yeah.
Actually gave me nightmares when I...
Hold on, Jen. My son needs me. Let it keep recording. Hold on. What, Hayden?
Okay.
You got a what?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Okay, what's that mean? Is that good? Well, I'd say it's not too bad, right?
I say the concert choir I'm going to have to go to tonight is pretty bad.
All right, buddy, I got to record. All right, sorry.
13 and 14-year-olds playing instruments. Tell me how good that's going to be tonight.
That's
going to be great. No, they're better than that. Last time they did some kind of, they did the theme to the Avengers or something. It was really good.
Yeah, the kids are much better than, I was just going to say, these kids today are much better than we ever were. Mm. Okay, go ahead. I won't swallow anymore. Except if you want me to.
You always love to swallow. Well, anyway. Yeah.